This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Hello and welcome back to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bill McCush. This week we'll hear from some local politicians speaking to some of the headlines over the past year. For our last program of 2022, Cape Breton Council MP Mike Calloway, Regional Mayor Amanda McDougall, and Victoria County Warden Bruce Morrison weigh in on a number of local topics as well as some national and global events that affected us right here on the island. And you'll also hear what they have on the agenda for next year. Up first, Amanda McDougall, the Regional Mayor, speaks with Bill Bradley.
To say it's been an interesting year would be an understatement when we're talking about the CBRM. To review 2022, we welcome the mayor of the CBRM, Amanda McDougall. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Now, we've had a lot of things happen in 2022. There's been a couple of contract disputes. We've had Hurricane Fiona, which was just one of those events that we never thought would happen here, and it did. How about maybe touching on that and see where we are as far as Fiona and how it's carrying over into 2023?
We obviously can still see the effects of Fiona throughout the municipality. You know, you still see those trees that are down. I'm outside right now and I can see some that are hanging over close to some wires. And I think that visual that is still out there, it really stirs up a lot of emotion around for people as well. And I think that's going to carry well into the years to come for folks. You know, anytime we hear of a weather alert, you know, pending rain or wind, it's going to stir up those emotions because that was a really, really difficult week and weeks to follow.
So as far as the CBRM is considered, where do we go from here? Because it kind of took a lot of people by surprise. We've always been, that'll just blow over, but it didn't hit it dead on. What kind of plan do we have moving in the future for preparations for storms like this?
Within the first 2 weeks of the new year, our council is coming together. We're going to have Nova Scotia Power, hopefully some of the telecommunications folks, and obviously our EMO staff, meet and do a workshop on, okay, what do we need going forward? How do we continue to be prepared for more frequent storms? And I think that's the real kicker here. CBRM and EMO have done an amazing job over the years of preparing and reacting to weather events. But this frequency of storms and the intensity of the weather events, this is something that we've not had to deal with in the past. I know of late we've been talking with ACOA and having conversations on making sure that there are funds out there to provide training for not only our volunteers, but our staff members around emergency preparedness. We've also talked to them about making sure that there are funds available for increased amounts of comfort centers and the resources that are needed to make sure those folks that are operating the comfort centers have every resource that they have to take care of our community. So it's top of mind every single day. And I think, again, we really have to be conscious of that emotional piece of this too. People get really worried when weather events come up.
As you know, people are still dealing with their homes and fixing the roofs and holes in the roofs and their property, which still, as you mentioned, is going to be an ongoing process into 2023. But it wasn't all doom and gloom in 2022. Charlotte Street getting repaved and revitalization, and that project just finished up the phase number one of it just recently.
Well, you know what? I was just down there, actually, the other night doing some Christmas shopping, and it's so beautiful. I love how much pedestrian space is there. And, you know, I had popped into a couple of the shops and they were just telling me how grateful they are for that road to be reopened again, for people just to be able to drive up and down the street. But it is really beautiful. And we know that there's two more phases to come. That project is indicative of so much that's happening in the CBRM. We are just bursting at the seams with development, with growth. It's wonderful. It's the best problem to have when you have so much construction and development.
Now, some folks that I'd been talking to over the last couple of days, knowing that I'm going to be talking to the mayor, one of the questions that they come up with is, you notice when you're going down that section of Charlotte Street, it's now down to one lane with wider space for pedestrians and vehicles. So the whole street is going to be one lane? Is that correct?
Yep, but there is space, like you said, for loading and unloading of vehicles and parking. And really, when you're in downtown areas, anywhere really in North America and Europe, you see that. You want to limit the vehicular traffic and increase the way people can access it by foot or by bicycle, and also making sure it's accessible for any type of aids people have, so wheelchairs, walkers, things like that. We want to make sure that our public spaces are accessible to every single person.
So the next couple of phases, when can we expect them to start?
Okay, so you're going to see this same type of schedule. So in the spring, we'll see phase two, and then in the next year, the next spring, you'll see phase three. So doing it year by year, it's over a three-year period.
So how are we doing? Are we on budget?
Everything seems to be going tickety-boo as far as I'm aware. It's a thoughtful thing and a conscious effort to do this in a phased approach, because to shut down Charlotte Street as a whole, it just timeline-wise, you wouldn't be able to complete it in one construction season. And, you know, you want to mitigate impact to small business as well. So I got to give kudos to the Sydney Downtown Development Association for really working with the downtown businesses and CDRM and making sure that there were information packages shared out there of timelines, of contacts, of, you know, if you're experiencing some problems, give this person a call. They were so instrumental in getting that information and education out there.
Well, as you know, this goes hand in hand with the local business, as you just mentioned. But with as far as tourism goes and the cruise ship season, thank goodness that was back this year, although we did have to cancel some ships because of Fiona. But all indications are, when I was talking with the Port Authority, they expect next year to be one of the biggest years ever.
All you have to do is read into some of the tourism reporting from the past season. People are flying, people are cruising, people are traveling. It's almost like all of that pent-up COVID travel suppression is just coming out the woodwork. It's so good to see, but also people are looking for some fun. It's been a really, really tough few years. Getting out into nature, going and having an adventure in a new place, like, we need that. And let me tell you, Sydney and CBRM and every nook and cranny of Lewisburg and North Sydney and Sydney Mines, people have a great time when they come adventuring here.
We talked a number of months ago, and we chatted about the fact that the people coming here to Cape Breton Island and really enjoying their stay. So what do we got planned for 2023 and beyond to get people stay here maybe a little bit longer?
I know one thing. Last year, holy cow, when Tim Baker came for Making Waves, that was probably the highlight of my summer. I just love him so much. But our recreation department does an incredible job of festivals, not only from the CBRM perspective, but supporting community festivals as well. So I think you're going to see a lot more outdoor fun activities, music, markets, that kind of thing, bringing large groups of people together to really enjoy one another. And that's what we're good at.
And speaking about bringing people together, I noticed a number of months ago that you had invited newcomers to come and get information about the municipality, a lot of students coming in. The population is the biggest it's been since the 80s.
Yeah, I'm turning 40 this year, so I can't, that's how I count my time. This is the first time there's been any type of population stabilization in over 40 years. It is remarkable. Again, that does bring with it some challenges. Of course, we are going into a meeting to talk about rapid housing initiative funding. So making sure that we are attracting and leveraging as much money to go into housing development as possible is really important when you're talking about our population growing at the rate it is. That being said, I did host the mayor's welcome event because you want people to be aware of the services that the municipality offers, right? Explaining how our garbage collection system works, making sure folks know where to go if they need help with language development, what our library systems offer, what the YMCA has. It was just a way to bring people together so they know where all the services are.
So is that part of the reason, I know over the last number of months, recommendations that to downsize council, but that didn't happen at a recent meeting. You kept the status quo at 12. Is that part of the reason why you kept the status quo? Because rate of newcomers coming to the area basically serviced them and all the people in the CBRM?
Precisely. You know, that conversation council was really interesting. But what really got me was, okay, if we're growing, if we're finally seeing our population increase, decreasing representation is probably the wrong way to go. My other worry going to six would have been that you would only need perhaps four counselors to pull decisions, to make decisions. And so having a wider, more diverse representation, really, really important to good decision making.
So it seems to be that the public are okay with that.
You know what? That is so true. So when you don't hear from the public, you can really generally, I think, agree that people are happy. It's when people are unhappy as you see the wider and larger responses.
Speaking about being happy, we're looking forward to 2023. What kind of things that we should be looking forward to in 2023 as far as the CBRM goes?
You know what? Something that I'm really excited about is the continued conversations and the development agreement that I hope comes in 2023 for the waterfront. You know, we had Doucette Development come in and introduce themselves to the wider public. Working with them is going to be amazing. I cannot wait to see more businesses and more apartments and just that waterfront come alive. I get jealous when I go to Halifax when I see all of the cranes on their waterfront area and their downtown areas. It's happening here. And to me, I'm really spoiled to be a mayor at this time because there's just so much good happening.
And I see so many businesses opening in the downtown district here in Cape Breton, all over, but in the downtown district. And that means they have a lot of faith in what's coming in the next couple of years, especially with the opening of the Nova Scotia Community College Marconi campus. And that's going to play a big role as well as far as taxes go in downtown.
Oh, for sure. But you know what? There's also places like the Northside Business Park, for example. When I was on council as a counselor, we had the conversations initially about how to attract more businesses to that area. And that place is chock packed full. To come here and try to find commercial spaces is difficult for the very first time in a long time. And that's great news. That being said, when you do have development, when you do have growth, when you do have all of this new building happening, you also have to think about infrastructure. So it's easy to say, oh, there's going to be a lot more taxes. It's going to be great. We can have all these windfall accounts. Well, no, we need to keep investing in things like wastewater treatment, eventually having to expand on water, making sure that we are reaching out to larger populations via transit. So all of this takes big investment too.
One of the things that I've been asked, knowing that I was talking to you today, one of the things that I'm thinking of as well, with the Nova Scotia Community College now moving downtown and such a large population of students, what about parking? What's the CBRM doing to accommodate that?
Yeah, and so that really links into our transit work that's being done. I know the study is just about finished for our new transit hub, and that's to be located towards the Open Hearth Park area. The hope is we get people to use transit more. That's a big part of a parking strategy. So making sure that people have a space where they can leave vehicles, hop on transit, maybe even hop on a bicycle, that is a huge part. So we focus on that a lot.
So as you know, received $15 million from the provincial government. That was a one-time payment. How do you make up for that now as far as taxes and everything goes? As far as I know, it's a one-time payment, right?
Correct. So that being said, it was a one-time payment, but there have been ongoing conversations and negotiations regarding the Municipal Government Act and the Service Exchange Agreement at the provincial level. So we are going into our budget this year, probably starting into January with the workshops and doing all of that planning. But we will be waiting until we hear from the provincial government to know exactly what that new funding formula is going to be province-wide and what CBRM is going to be getting. I'm anticipating we would be getting something equal to, if not more, than we received before. But again, we just have to wait until they finalize those negotiations.
So is there any surprises that you can let us in on for 2023 that's coming that people aren't aware of right now? Some good news stories?
No, not that people aren't aware of. We're just keeping on. What I hope is that we don't have as many surprises this year. You know, Fiona really, she took the wind out of us. That was a really difficult time, and we're still dealing with it. I laugh because there were surprises in the form of spiders, for example. that really was, I don't know if you recall, but when we had purchased the bus from California, and with it came a nest of black widow spiders. Those are the surprises I'm hoping we don't have this year.
Good. So to sum it up in a couple of words, what would you expect as far as the mayor of the municipality for 2023?
I think you're going to see more people, more events, more fun, and more development. It's coming every single day. People inquiring about our community and how they can come here. People are recognizing this gem that we've known about for a long time. And so it's just going to be more, more, more.
We'll be right back.
Cape Breton Canso MP Mike Helloway says it's been a bit of a bumpy ride for his constituents and for people across the nation in the past year. He says there have been a number of challenges, but he's optimistic we can take a turn for the best. We start out today on the topic of inflation and the warning the Bank of Canada governor had for Canadians earlier this year, with Tiff Macklem saying it could be a tough winter with the price of goods and services, but the economy will likely bounce back in the summer.
Yeah, I mean, can we weather the storm? You bet we can. I mean, it is going to be a challenging winter in terms of inflation that's global, brought on by, you know, COVID and the supply chains and also the war in Ukraine. So it's a global inflation, but it impacts every single one of us in Cape Breton Council in warm form or another. So we, you know, we keep that in mind. But can we survive it? Can we get through it? There are some that say Canada is broken, and I say that that is hogwash. We're going through a challenging time, and that's why we need a couple of things. We need programs that address affordability, which we've put forward in the fall economic statement. And we also need to focus on, you know, strategically making investments that are focused on the debt and deficit. But first and foremost, affordability and compassion and getting programs out that get money in the pockets of people. So, you know, do I have concerns? Yes, I do. But I also know that, you know, quite frankly, in the government that I serve, we have done and will continue to do what we can to help people, whether it is a $500 doubling of the HST credit and other measures to assist folks, including dental. That all plays a role in the bottom line. But when people say, and other politicians say, that Canada is broken, I say that that's wrong. Number one, we're resilient, we're strong. There was a former prime minister who called Atlantic Canada, I think it was a self-defeating region. I never subscribed to that. I will never subscribe to that. I don't believe that. I know people that are listening will not believe that and don't believe that to be true. But we need to do what we do best in Cape Breton and is be there for each other. And, you know, I saw that firsthand, Bill, when I was on the ground for at least 7-8 days after the day after Fiona, and I was out in Glace Bay and Lewisburg in parts of Sydney. And for every act of destruction, and there was a lot, there was like 3 acts of kindness. And so we got to keep that in mind, that we got to be there for each other, and government will be there to play its role as it has. But we got to be there for each other. That whole song of "We'll Rise Again," the songwriter didn't just, that just didn't pop in his head one day. That's something that you believe in. That's something that you feel. That's who we are. So we'll get through this. It'll be challenging. Make no mistake about it. Global inflation is a challenging thing on the pocketbooks of every single person listening to this radio interview. Oil, food prices. But we'll get through it. And we'll get through it with compassion, affordability programs, and being there for each other. And I include the government in that respect.
Mike, what do you have to say to the people who would refer to Canada as being broken? I assume you're probably referring to the protest in Ottawa to COVID-19 mandates, among other issues, but that one certainly did divide Canadians.
No question. And I was in Ottawa for most of the protest. I was there when the Emergencies Act came into being and the police officers came and did their duty. Look, I am a huge supporter and believe in my heart, in my mind, of the importance of protesting lawfully. But that's not what happened here. And if you talk to people in Ottawa, people that live in Ottawa, people that were working in Ottawa, I'm not talking politicians, although I can include them in this, and bureaucrats and civil servants, but people that are working in hotels and Shoppers Drug Mart, it was a very incredibly stressful time, and I'm understating it. And we need to, you know, do a couple of things. Respect lawful protests. But when my freedom takes away your freedom, that's not progress. That is a stalemate. That is an infringement. And so the police officers that took part ensuring that people were removed from the downtown core in an orderly and peaceful fashion. They deserve a tremendous amount of credit from Canadians from coast to coast to coast, and police officers from all over the country were there. But we also have to understand, too, that there was in that convoy, there were those that did come for the weekend and left. But a lot of people stayed. And that, to me, it was counterproductive because people were infringing on other people's freedoms. So the fact of the matter is, Bill, I think it was a stressful time. I think it was handled by the federal government, and I think I'll leave it to the listeners to determine, you know, the testimony of my colleagues at the inquiry. But I think, you know, it was constructive, productive testimony where ministers and the prime minister and the deputy prime minister spoke as to why the Emergencies Act was followed. And I'll leave those to that watched it to determine what they believe. But I feel the federal government did the only thing and the right thing. And also to use it quickly and then dispense of it quickly. But we as Canadians need to ensure that we're listening to each other. I was on a plane a couple of weeks ago, and I was talking to a gentleman, and we were talking about this very point. And he was, I would say, pro-convoy, and I think everyone would know where I stand on it. But we had a really great conversation because we, guess what we were doing? We were talking to each other. We were listening to each other. I was thinking on the plane, Bill, if we could just have a setup where people could sit by each other and say, let's have a conversation on this topic. Then you start to debunk myths and you start to, you know, perhaps not agree with positions, but perhaps understand the root causes. And then you can start to work from there. But we as Canadians went through a difficult time. We already went through a difficult time with the convoy. But I believe, you know, the resolution that came from that was, speaks to leadership. And when crisis reveals character, time and time again, you will see the character in times of crisis and how people respond and react, both in leadership positions and not. We had Fiona, you know, and, that was incredibly crushing to the people of Cape Breton. And just I toured many places and saw and talked to many people. And the federal government's going to be there with $1 billion to backstop the provincial DFA process. By the way, that particular investment in the fall economic statement was voted down by the Conservatives, supported by us and the NDP. But we're going to be there for people. And we have been there for people. But sometimes it is not fast enough. Sometimes it's slow. And you learn from each crisis, you learn from each issue that impacts Canadians, whether it is the convoy, whether it is Fiona, whether it is healthcare. And looking at healthcare, Bill, and saying, you know, the federal government is going to be there to invest in healthcare, but we want to ensure that there are outcomes, intended outcomes attached to the money, and there's focus to that. This all goes into making Canada better. And we do that by rolling up our sleeves and meeting with the provinces. We do that by rolling up our sleeves and working with First Nations communities. We do that by listening to people that we disagree with. And hopefully they listen too. And we get to a better place. But it's all a work in progress. But it's one that is so important to me because I look at the role of a politician, an MP, is a servant leader, be there and act in the service of others. And sometimes that's easy. And sometimes it's difficult, but you remain in the foxhole to fight the good fight.
You mentioned some of the headlines there, Mike, including Fiona. But first, not long after the start of that protest in Ottawa, we saw a different kind of protest taking place in Ukraine and Russia on the onset of the invasion there. And both you and your Liberal counterpart, Jaime Batiste, the Sydney Victoria MP, Russia has a long list of Canadians banned from entering the country, and you two are on that list, Mike, but you both describe it as a badge of honor.
Well, there's no question. I consider it a badge of honor to be banned from Russia. The war, we all know, the war is unjust, it's vile, it's criminal, and has no place in the world today, yet it's almost a year old. And Canada is investing and has invested millions upon millions of dollars in non-lethal aid and in lethal aid. And, you know, we, along with other Western countries, are doing everything we can to support Ukraine on a military aspect and also on a humanitarian aspect. The fact of the matter is that Putin has and continues to perform violent, illegal acts on people in the country of Ukraine. And we need to be steadfast. We have sanctions against key oligarchs in Russia. We need to continue to double down on that until Russia is removed from Ukraine. And quite frankly, that Putin is shown the door.
And back to Fiona, Mike, it wasn't expected to have such an impact. And there are still some people out there, unfortunately, trying to get back on their feet. But we did see people come together, whether it was a local food bank or a generous neighbor. And it's one of those times when you'll see all three levels of government come together, regardless of political stripes.
Well, absolutely. We do what we have traditionally have been known for and what people know us for outside of Cape Breton is come together in times of crisis. And so, you know, you're absolutely right, Bill. Look, Minister Bill Blair and Minister Annan were there night and day for Jaime and myself in terms of finding out what can we be doing, what should we be doing, where do we need to go, where the puck is and where it's going in terms of response. So a huge shout out for those two and my colleague, Jaime Batiste. And we work very closely with Mayor McDougall and council and also, Johnny White, for example, in Glace Bay. Johnny is always a grassroots guy in terms of being not just a politician, but just a good person. He was and worked hand in glove with him as well. And then you got to see communities coming together. And the day after the hurricane, I traveled to number two in Glace Bay and walked the streets talking to folks, many who did not have roofs on their home. And, you can see people coming out of their homes to provide food to those individuals that weren't as lucky as they were. People making repairs on an unusually warm September afternoon. People were just there for people. Food banks were there for people. But, average everyday people were there for each other. And I always said this, and I stand by it, for every act of destruction, there was about four or five acts of kindness. And I saw that firsthand, Bill. I mean, on Monday after the storm, I went to the Mayflower Mall parking lot, and that was where Central Command was going to be. And I met, Team Rubicon, and I met probably most of the individuals at the time that were there from other parts of the country and in the United States that were power line technicians and people that were dispensing of trees and whatnot. And I thanked each one of them. And then the Army, men and women from all over this country were here and they were happy to be here and they wanted to serve. And you start to look at the fact that this goes back to the silliness, quite frankly, and the destructive language that some will use to explain where we are in Canada. When you say we're broken, no, we're not. We're going through a challenging time. But the strength of Canada, the strength of the Atlantic region, the strength of Cape Breton is when we come together for a common goal. And when we do come together for a common goal, just like anything else in life, when you become a team, you're going to probably have more successes than you were failures. So all of these folks came together. It wasn't easy, Bill. It wasn't easy. I mean, there were some moments that, you're communicating with the province and the province is communicating with you and the municipality is in the mix and you're dealing also with people that may not have insurance or don't have insurance. All of this is complicated and not easy work, but that's why you're in the fight. Whether you're elected or not, when you're helping someone, you're in the fight to help people. No different in politics. I mean, you're there to, hopefully you are, and as Sister Peggy Butts would say, who taught me a lot of things in life, including poli sci, there are two types of people that go into politics. Those that want to do something, those that want to be someone. And I haven't come across too many people that want to just be someone. I come across people that want to help, that want to do something. And that goes for people in the community, Bill, whether it is the food bank, whether it is, you know, businesses that have come out to help, whether it is people like Dave Saul or at the Youth Center or the Canadian Coast Guard College cadets who during that whole crisis came, you know, they weren't taking the courses at the time. They were there to help everyday Cape Bretoners in terms of providing meals and providing comfort and just being a welcoming hand and a hug to support people. That's what we do best. And as governments and the histories of governments throughout the Canada's history, when there are crisis situations, when there are economic challenges, good governments will rise to the occasion and other governments will talk about buzzwords like broken and just ridiculous things. The fact of the matter is that we're a strong country. The fact of the matter is we're a strong region and we do have our challenges, child poverty, drug addiction, accessible housing. But we don't get out of that by just creating, snippets on Facebook to be heard that are not exactly true or accurate. We do that by doing the hard work, and that's helping Canadians.
And what about the carbon tax? Of course, there have been times throughout the year where politicians are on the same page. Other times, they couldn't be further apart. But Ottawa is describing this as a fair and affordable pollution pricing system with this investment of $250 million, and that's for the oil-to-heat pump affordability grant. That's the oil to heat pump affordability grant, excuse me. What does this mean for the people in your riding, Mike, who will benefit from this program?
Well, thanks for the question. So when it comes to, a price on pollution, there's two things that come to mind for me and I hope to the constituents of the area. One is, how do we put a price on pollution and focus on fighting climate change? And the other is affordability for everyday Canadians. And so those are the two principles there. So some provinces have come up with their own plan that has been approved by the federal government because there is actually legislation that, provinces must meet to ensure that they meet the standards of the federal government in terms of price on pollution and a climate action plan. So some provinces have done that. Some other provinces have decided by design to allow the federal backstop to come in, which is providing climate rebates quarterly back to hard coal cash back to everyday Canadians and whatnot. So the province of Nova Scotia decided, it came on a couple of plans that didn't meet that certain standard, and then the backstop came in. So what the backstop means for everyday Cape Bretoners is that they're going to receive a check on a quarterly basis. About 80% of Canadians will. And I think that's around $249, $250 per quarter for the average family of four, for example, in Cape Breton. So what that's going to do is that it's going to provide money back to individuals. So people will get back more than they put in. So that's number one. Number two is that, like anything in life, you don't have one solution to solve a very large problem, which is climate change. And we saw firsthand with Fiona, climate change is here and it's not going anywhere in the foreseeable future in terms of impacting Cape Bretoners. So we need to deal with that. So you've got the affordability aspect through the rebates, and then you have several spokes in a wheel, as it were, in terms of not one solution, but multiple, pathways to solutions. And the other is around home heating and mechanisms to get people off of oil and get them on the right path in respect to that. So that, to me, is being responsible. It is providing people money, incentives for people to get off oil as their primary source, and also providing rebates back to everyday Canadians. Now, there are those that would disagree and they would say, well, we want our own Nova Scotia carbon pricing system. And the premier has that ability, if he so chooses, to put forward a plan. I know he put a couple of plans together that were not successful. But if he were to look at another plan that would be of meet a certain standard in terms of climate resilience and really focusing on climate change, then we would be more than happy to have those conversations. In the meantime, many other provinces like Nova Scotia, I think Alberta, Ontario, have the carbon pricing system, the federal backstop, the rebates and whatnot in their provinces. And that seems to be going well for all intents and purposes. So this is really, you elect governments to, I think, in my opinion, when I was not a politician, I would always look at candidates and I would look at, who's looking after, who's looking after us in terms of affordability and investing in Canadians while taking problems seriously. And I think this plan put forward will put cold hard cash in the hands of Cape Bretoners, while at the same time providing other programs for them to get off home heating oil, not to say one solution, but multiple solutions, because climate change is real, and we know how real it is in Glace Bay. We know how real it is in Lewisburg. We all know how real it is in Sydney and New Waterford and Donkin and Morion. So I believe that this is a responsible plan, but it's a compassionate plan. Now, people can debate that, and I know that there are some that have, and that's great, and that's good, and that's important. But we also need, if there's not an alternative plan in place, that's better. Then we go with the plan that I think will help Canadians the most, and I think that's this plan.
Right on. Thanks, Mike. That's all the questions I had for 2022. Can we take a quick peek to 2023, Mike? What does your office have in store for next year?
Well, I think they'll expect what they've received in the last 3 years and going into our fourth, I think, Bill, in terms of hard work, persistence, and just being tenacious on all topics that are important to people in Cape Breton. But I look at the community hub that we announced in August in Glace Bay this past year, and that was a result of a years long work working with community groups and the federal government, and to focus on a community hub that will, I think, reimagine, redesign, and reinvigorate the downtown core of Glace Bay. So what's possible when we're working together? A lot's possible. I look at things like in terms of potential projects. I'm very bullish, very supportive, very focused on how can the federal government work with Cape Breton University to expand its footprint in terms of new infrastructure and new services for Cape Breton University, because it's a driver of the economy here. It's also an impetus for social development and economic development. So I'm going to be focusing very, very hard and working to get key investments to Cape Breton University. And then I'm working with at least a half a dozen groups in the riding, Bill, of focusing on affordable and accessible housing from Glace Bay to Shettycamp to Inverness to Richmond County. They'll be folks as well. But I'm really bullish this year coming up and the following years, because I look at things like green hydrogen, and I look at the fact that offshore wind, green hydrogen, we're one of the primary areas that many different large-scale businesses are looking at with respect to green hydrogen. I think Cape Breton Island, the entire island of Cape Breton, can be a hub, a center of excellence in terms of green hydrogen. It's going to take time, but I think this year might be a year for us to watch to see how that progress grows and how much of a foundation for a new economy in Cape Breton, and for that matter, the region, the country, and perhaps the world.
And last but not least on the show this week, Victoria County Council Warden Bruce Morrison takes a look back at the agenda of 2022 and what's in store for 2023.
So as far as looking back at last year for Victoria County, we had a very good year administratively. However, we were, from a county perspective, we were looking at rebounding from COVID. We had two quiet years, obviously. So this past year, we saw an increase in our tourism industry, which is what we need. We rebounded nicely from that. Facilities did well. We also continue to see a fair bit of development across the municipality. The Highland Village expansion happened this year. There is activity at the waterfront of the deck with development going on down there and improvements to the wharf itself. And we continue to keep an eye on the development as it progresses at Cape Smoky and the development at Ski Hill, which is also exciting for us. So we've also invested fairly heavily into trail development so that we will become a Four Seasons tourism destination.
Warden, the tourism operators in Victoria County are used to seeing some very impressive numbers with local visitors and people from away. And then, like you say, COVID happened. But the Highland National Parks being among them to see the numbers bounce back, that must be encouraging for you and your colleagues to see.
Yeah, definitely. We've become a destination of choice. I think that's one of the benefits of COVID. We have come back nicely to pre-COVID numbers at a number of our tourist locations, including the National Parks, the Bell Museum, and our tourism operators are reporting a very positive season. So for the most part, hopefully this is it's trending up and it will continue over the next couple of years as well.
And some of the issues that were discussed in the council chambers throughout the past year, among them the county asking the province to allow for alternative type vehicles, among them maybe golf carts on the streets of Bedeck, and that request was made for the third time. What's the latest on that, Warden?
We just sent a request into the Department of Transportation. What we were looking for, it would be electric vehicles, you know, similar to golf carts, not necessarily golf carts, but we see that we don't have a taxi service within the community of Bedeck, and we were approached by at least one of the business owners to see if this might be a viable option for us, both for tourists to be able to drive around the community in designated areas, and also that they could use some electric vehicles as vehicles that they could run errands, service runs, you know, to the local home hardware, to the local building supplies. They could use some of these vehicles. They would be no emissions. They're cheap to run, and they could make multiple trips with them.
Also, speaking to the community of Bedeck, there's the situation with the courthouse there. The council is possibly looking at selling it among the options on the table. Can you maybe just give us a quick history recap on why this discussion is taking place and what do you expect as a result?
Well, the reason why we're looking at it, I wouldn't necessarily say that we're selling it. We hope to have it repurposed or, you know, or indeed it could go up for sale, but we would like to see the building stay intact and have a different use. That's our preference. We are currently trying to figure out what we're going to do with the building. Its purpose as a municipal office is pretty well run its course. The original building was built, the original part of the building was built in 1889. So there are challenges with it, meeting the 2030 accessibility regulations. So the building is aged and some areas are not in very good repair. So we really have three options, either we repair it, sell it, or we could take it down and rebuild in its place.
So there is still some work to do on that file. Councillors, council can expect to see that item on the agenda for 2023 as well.
Definitely will be revisited, and we had an expression of interest out for any agencies or really companies to take a look at a number of properties including that we have, including the courthouse that we would look at perhaps putting on the market. And our hope with that building is that somebody would purchase it and repurpose it. It's got a lot of history and the architecture. It's a beautiful building, but it's reached its end of its era as far as using it for municipal offices.
Warden, if we can talk about the housing shortage in the county for something that you and your counselors have discussed, businesses having trouble to find a place for workers to stay. A lot of people may see that as a measure of success or the price to pay for success. There is work to do, but finding the accommodations, and that's not only an issue in Victoria County, of course, that's across the board.
Yeah, that is an issue not only in Victoria County, but certainly across this province. We've had a number of businesses express concerns about not being able to attract staff and keep staff because there isn't affordable or available housing in communities, whether it's Bedeck or Inganish or Neal's Harbour, and it continues to be a challenge for us. We are looking at that issue right now, and we have a number of properties that the municipality itself owns that we're hoping that if we offer the property up to a potential investor or a partner, and it might encourage some developers to come in and do some housing. We've also have an arrangement with Destination Cape Breton. Cape Breton, they're looking on our behalf at a piece of property in Ganesh that there could be multiple unit housing there that would help provide housing for both seasonal staff and permanent staff for the tourism industry in Ganesh, specifically in this case.
And again, this isn't an issue that hits close to home only for Victoria County, but the pandemic obviously would have had an effect on this, where people have been relocating, and there are a lot of new faces in Victoria County and across the province.
Absolutely. You know, it's certainly a challenge for businesses, and one of the, I guess if you want to call it a benefit of COVID, is that property became very desirable in rural parts of this province, and Victoria County is one. So a lot of properties have been purchased. We've had an influx of people, as you mentioned. The other issue is that there are a number of Airbnbs that are currently operating in Victoria County that's taken a number of our rental stock, that homes that people would normally rent. They're now being purchased and turned into Airbnbs, so they're no longer available. So yes, with demand for property and for homes in Victoria County, it has created a challenge for operators and businesses to find housing for their staff. And that is a daily conversation, particularly during the summer months.
Also, Warden, I'd like to ask you about the proposal for a new federal riding where Victoria County could be in an even bigger riding that would include Antigonish and Guysborough counties, as well as Inverness, Richmond counties, and parts of the regional municipality here.
Yeah, that I would say whoever's going to be elected, they're going to have a substantial area to represent. And just, I can assure you, the travel within Victoria County offers some challenges, both distance-wise and particularly during the winter months. And and when I think of the size of this riding, it's going to be a lot of work just from travel from one end to the other, and for whoever the MP will be at the time to be able to travel around and attend various events and make sure they get the opportunity to visit a lot of the folks when they're doing their campaigning. So it's a substantial riding, and it's going to be interesting to see if they maintain those boundaries.
When it comes to reshaping or redrawing the lines of a federal boundary like this, there are many communities that are unique and have many things in common. But Victoria County, traditionally, it has some differences, identity differences from Antigonish and Guysborough County on the other side of the causeway there. But is there a concern that perhaps there may be a loss of identity to some degree?
No, Well, I would agree with that assessment. You know, you can get lost in the mix. I mean, it's a large riding, and it's going to be a challenge for us to have our voice heard and get our priorities moved to the top of the list. So I think not only Victoria County, but the other rural municipalities will be facing the same issue as we will. And it's going to be a challenge for whoever is the successful MP to cover this rather expansive riding.
And on the other hand, there weren't something that a lot of the communities in Cape Breton can identify with was with the storm Fiona. Some people affected, unfortunately, more than others, but how did your community fare out with that?
Well, it just depends where you were in the municipality, really. We had areas that were deeply impacted and others to a lesser extent, but particularly Neil's Harbor, areas along the Atlantic Ocean, we saw a lot of private property damage. We saw a lot of tidal damage, coastal damage. The interior of the county just seemed to be impacted less. And the areas along the Perdure Lakes, particularly along Bedeck Bay and the village of Bedeck, a lot of damage to the shore and the infrastructure along the shore. So there was considerable damage done. And unfortunately, we had three storms last year, and each one of them had substantial consequences in regards to infrastructure, not only property damage, but roads, bridges, and as mentioned, private properties.
Yes, even though a lot of people were very prepared for Fiona, it did impact us more than we expected. A lot of damage was done there, but people up on the northern part of the island, they're covered by Victoria County. They're pretty used to extreme weather, though, aren't they? I guess that is, again, the price to pay for living in a beautiful part of the island like that.
Well, certainly our communities were built along the coast, just access to, you know, fishing in particular, and Bedeck, just because of the access, it's built right on the shores of the Perdure Lake. So everything is either impacted either by the Perdure Lakes or by the Atlantic Ocean. So when you add high winds and heavy rains and high tides, it's a recipe for damage under certain circumstances, both to private property and to our coastline and our shoreline.
Okay, thanks very much, Warden Morrison. Always a pleasure to talk to you. That's all the questions I had, but would you be able to give us a quick peek at the agenda for Victoria County Council in 2023?
Definitely. Well, we'll be continuing to develop our trail system. That is a priority for us. We will be sitting down in January, late January, early February, doing a session with Council, and we're going to do our priority setting for the next 2 years. So I'll have a better sense after we have those meetings what will be identified. We are in a period of growth, again, with the development that we're seeing, and improvements to some of our sites. So tourism is coming back, fishery is strong, and our economy goes as those two resource-based economies go. So I see a positive future for the municipality, for Victoria County, as we move forward with the trends that we are seeing.
That's all for Dialogue this week. Thanks for listening. I'm Bill McCush.
Catch Dialogue 3 times weekly, Sunday at noon, Tuesday and Thursday at 10 p.m. Dialogue is a production of the Coast 89.7 News. For story suggestions, contact 902-284-NEWS. That's 902-284-6397. Or email news@coastalradio.ca. For past episodes of Dialogue, check out our Dialogue podcasts, available now online at coastalradio.ca.